and a warm welcome to the Blue Team Podcast, your weekly unofficial podcast dedicated to all things Peterhead FC. On this week's episode, we look back on Saturday's home win over Bonnyrigg Rose, preview the trip to Dumbarton this weekend, and there's reaction to the SPFL Trust Trophy fourth round draw. Yes, welcome along to this week's episode of the Blue Toon Podcast. I am Colin Byers, with me, as usual, Martin Smith. Martin, welcome along. How are you on this autumn evening?
Good evening, I'm very well, thanks, Colin. How are you?
Not too bad, yes. Full of the joys of spring, as they say, fairly late, but yeah, we're getting there. But we've got a home win and a home goals finally to talk about this season, which was good, as well as a preview of other things as well. But first of all, I want to take time again just to thank Rory McAllister for Friday, and for everybody who watched and commented and gave us feedback on Friday night, which was a really good, I think it was a really good episode. Something slightly different. So thanks to Rory and to the club and the management team for allowing us to make it happen as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've heard a few snippets back to folk, and it's been well received. And you know, it's hopefully these are the sort of things that we're hoping that we can be mayor of. And yeah, like you said, just echoing that comments as well, with thanking the club for permission and Rory for coming on.
Yeah, it's something we can be mayor of, but it's. It can be time-consuming, and it can be a bit of organisational kind of things as well.
Yes.
So I wouldn't expect it every week. However, we may do it again. Maybe just before the Dundee United game, it might be the ideal time, but we'll see that. No, I thought Rory came across quite well, and was genuinely looking forward to getting back to playing at Balmore in a Peterhead shirt again.
Yeah, and as Rory said through the interview, I think his outlook has slightly changed as well, whereas maybe 5 years ago he'd have been looking to score all the goals, now he's just happy to contribute. And I think that's going to serve us great going forward this season. I think him and Shanks up top will do really well. They're not competing against each other, they're working with each other as a team and a partnership, and I think we'll see the labours of that fruit come through nicely.
Yeah, and we'll mention his potentially setting up Shanks for one later on in the game against Bonnyrigg, which was cleared offline, which we'll also come on to. Another piece of business, we sort of touched on it on Friday as well, but we'll cover it again today. The SPFL Trust Trophy fourth round draw. We've been drawn against Dundee United at home weekend of the 14th or 15th of October. Has it been confirmed if it is the 14th or 15th yet? I think the club and with the sounds of it, the management team are hoping it's going to be the TV game as well, which I think it probably will be. But just kind of thoughts on the draw. It's probably the best draw we could have had, but also the worst draw we could have had as well. You know, being the highest ranked side left in the competition, but if you look at it from a club's kind of perspective, touched on potential TV deal, but the side of crowd that will be there for that game as well, it'll be a money spinner, a much needed money spinner for the club.
Yeah, when you think of the teams that we could have got, like you said, I think it is probably a good draw, but also a bad draw in terms of, you know, the chance of progression. Now, it's not impossible, far from it, but it's certainly an uphill task. I certainly don't think Dundee United will be fancying it either. I'm sure they don't know what really be coming up to Balmoor at the weekend either. So, yeah, I think, look, from a club point of view, the finances will be good. Hopefully it will be on TV. And the players as well to showcase their talent that they've got. It's a game that I'm sure Dundee United want to really be, you know, relishing either. But, you know, we give ourselves a chance of going through, and that's all you can ask for. It's a home tie, and we'll take the game to Dundee United.
And given that, if you were watching the draw live, there was only four teams left. We were one. The Welsh side was the one as well. Dundee United and East Fife were the other two sides. And then New Saints come out, and you were just thinking to yourself, oh, Christ, here we go. We're going to be away to Wales.
Yeah, we were watching the draw live, and the second last draw was away to Wales. And I was almost convinced that it was going to be an away trip to Wales, but... thankfully that went to East Fife, but then on the flip side, just very quick realisation of, right, okay, we're now playing probably one of the fancied teams in the competition left. It's a home tie. We give ourselves a chance of going through with it being a home tie, and that's all you can really ask for.
Having already played them this season, I know it was the League Cup at the start of the season, but Obviously, they'll be massive favourites anyway, but given it's at home, there is a sneaking chance that we might just do something against them. And given that the size of crowd might be there as well, I think we had over 3,000 near a full capacity for the Aberdeen game last season in League Cup. So I'd expect, again, roughly the same.
Yeah, I was expecting Dundee United to bring up a big crowd as well, actually. I think they will. I think there could be pressure on Dundee United in terms of they will be heavily fancied to go through in the competition, and rightly so, that they're against a team that's in League Two. I think the fact that we played Dundee United in the early rounds of the Premier Sports Cup, completely different games, but I think it certainly showed that we can, you know, pop a really good fight against a team that's just come down for the Premiership. We'll have nothing to fear, and I'm sure we'll have more confidence going into that game than we did the game down at Tannadice. Again, a few things on the day went against us in that particular occasion, but you know, it's, I think for the players' point of view, maybe a management team's point of view, not necessarily a point to prove, but you know, they maybe want to get one up in Dundee United on this occasion.
Yeah, we'll obviously cover that game in more detail as the weeks progress. That is, as I said, the week, the 14th and 15th of October, just for right at the start of the school holidays. So it should be a decent crowd there. So let's go on to Saturday's game. Home to Bonnyrigg, finally a home win and home goals to cheer about in the league this season. 2-1 it finished, and as I said, we got that monkey off our back, and I think Jordan did the post match after. I think he talked about that, getting that sort of monkey off their back, getting that first goal, getting the first victory, and they see it now as a chance to go in and kick on.
I think Jordan touched on in his post-match interview the club's, you know, quietly just ticking off some milestones and checklists, you know, the away win and back-to-back undefeated games and clean sheets and everything. So these are things that all breed confidence. I think it was important to win the game in terms of keeping momentum going, in terms of our league position. You know, it's 1 point off the top again, whereas if you lost the game, you're then 7 points off. It keeps that momentum of, you know, we're scoring goals, winning games, you know, you've got to keep that confidence up. And I think, yeah, as you tick everything off, overall Saturday was a very good performance, and it was also a really good result as well.
But it's winning tight games as well, which I think we said right at the start of the season that how important that could be. I mean, it's turning a potential draw into a win. And then maybe there might be games later on in the season where we're turning a draw, a loss and a draw, and those points could be critical as the season progresses, particularly against a side who were unbeaten and sitting top of the table at the time.
Absolutely, there's going to be games this season where we're not playing great, and if you can get a point out of it, then it's a good thing. I think Saturday was probably a case in point. You know, as the game wore to a conclusion, it's 1-1, we get the penalty, we then win the game. That is maybe, evidently, something last season we struggled to do. But this year, it's a case of keeping momentum. It's a valuable, you know, it's 3 points for us. Keeps us right in that hunt. You know, you look at the table, we're fifth, but we're also 1 point off the top. It's just being in that conversation. Got to remember, last season was that bad that, you know, confidence in the team just got absolutely shredded. So it's important that we just tick off these little milestones. And again, it keeps the players' confidence up.
And as you said, it was a case of maybe not playing particularly well, especially first half, but second half was a lot better, and being a lot braver and being able to withstand, I wouldn't say a barrage of attacking chances against us, but you know, you touched on it earlier, when you said last season, that would probably, we'd have been 2-0 down at half time before we kicked it, kind of thing, but we dug in, and the players are, you know, they've got the fight and they've got the desire to keep themselves in the game when it is a bit difficult.
Yeah, like we've said a few times, there's going to be occasions this season where we come up against teams who are very difficult to break down. We've got to be, you know, we've got to remember 90 minutes is a long time in football. Things can change. It's just trying to wear the opposition down. You've got to work the ball. You've got to be brave on the ball. You've got to take your chances, create them, and make space for each other. And I think this season there is going to be games where we come up against that sort of opposition, and it's how we can find that winning formula. I think Jordan and Ryan are trying to find different ways in doing it. We've seen the slight change in formation on Saturday. You know, players maybe not quite playing in position would think, but then they've got that knowledge to think, right, okay, in the second half we'll change it, it's not quite working. So they're trying to be brave as well, and I think we got our rewards for that on Saturday by getting 3 points.
And it was an unchanged side from the 2-0 win doing it to Arnhem, and it was a 4-4-2, as you said, maybe how we would be expecting it to be. Jordan played on it on the right wing, O'Keefe played on the left, and I think we both said it during the first half, especially the balance wasn't quite right there first half, and I think that's maybe the reason why Bonnie Rigg had so much of the ball.
Yeah, I think in terms of the formation, it probably was right. I just don't think the formation, the personnel suited. I think Jordan's very good being in the middle of the park, and that shows in terms of it on Saturday, really drifted out for that right hand side. So anytime Danny Strachan got the ball at right back, it was very difficult because he didn't really have that option ahead of him. He was trying to cover a lot of the ground, and Jordan drifting in, which was fine when the ball was on the left hand side, but when the ball was on the right hand side, it made it very difficult, very congested, and Bonnie Rigg were able to play on that. You notice a lot of their chances, especially in the first half, is coming down our right-hand side. They exploited that area, that there was gaps. But, you know, they rectified that in the second half. Hamish Ritchie came on, and you see the difference he made when he did come on.
And with them playing 3-5-2, 5-3-2, however you want to sort of call it, with the wing-backs, it would seem to be that a better option to have a 4-4-2 and keep your wide man wide, and therefore having, you know, your full back and your winger almost two against one against their full back.
Agreed. I think we didn't utilise it well enough in the first half, given the way they'd set up, which when the play for Bonnie Rigg broke down, I think it was a perfect opportunity to likes of use Conor O'Keefe on one side and Jordan Brown on the other. It just didn't quite materialise, and as you rightly pointed out on Saturday, that's probably why Bonnie Rigg had a lot of the ball, and they didn't create a host of chances, but they certainly knocked the ball around pretty comfortably. They didn't look overawed by anything, and I thought, first time we've seen them, I thought they were a very good outfit, very neat on the ball, but we maybe allowed them to be that sort of team, given the way that we'd set it up.
Certainly the first team, I think, out with the League Cup, that's come up here and looked to kind of be on the front foot rather than sort of sitting back and either hitting us on the break or coming up and playing for the draw.
I think there was maybe maybe Spartans. They had a 20 minutes, half an hour in their game for... They looked pretty assured on the ball, but nothing quite like that Bonnie did. They started the game off with real intent. Certainly a side that was full of confidence. You can see that by the way the league table is. They didn't come up here with any fear, which is what we're trying to install. Jordan Rice trying to install in the team, that making Balmour a bit of a fortress and difficult to come to. And Bonnie Rice showed no sign of that on Saturday. They came out of the traps really well. But when you've got a pitch like that we do at Balmour, you know, you want teams to enjoy playing football on it. But we're hoping that Peter Heath come out in the right end of the result.
It's safe to say in the first half hour, they were on top. They were the better side. They were creating chances. They had, especially from free kicks and corners, and a couple of headers, one just hitting the roof of the net, before really we got going.
I thought they were really dangerous, the set pieces. Whether it's something that they work on quite a bit in training, I would be surprised if they didn't, because there's a lot of intricate stuff happening in the box, whether it's slight blocks and the way they moved the players around to get in the right area. But yeah, like you said, there was two really good efforts, and also the header at the back post as well for a cross. So yeah, they could easily have found themselves 1-0 up in the first half, and probably when they went in at half-time goal, they would probably been disappointed with that.
29th minute before we really got our first effort on goal, and that was Rowan McAllister, slightly on the stretch from a blocked shot from the edge of the box, and it fell to him, just as I said, overstretching a little bit. It was a pretty comfortable save for Paddy Martin in the Bonnie Rigg goal.
Yeah, well, I don't think it really troubled him, did it? As you said, he's overstretched, but if there is somebody that you'd want to fall to on his return to Balmour, it would have been Rory, but it just didn't quite come out for him.
And then he had an even better chance right on half-time as well, with the header from Joe McKee free kick. You know, free header, absolutely nobody running about him, which is a criminal by Bonnie Riggs' defence. But you know, you would think he should be sticking that one away as well. Maybe just a little rush of blood to head, thinking he's going to knock it in his home debut again.
I think Rory, looking back, will be disappointed that he hasn't scored, or at least made the keeper work that wee bit more. But credit to Joe McKee for the ball in. Great cross in. Rory hasn't really got to do much with it, which sounds daft, but that's probably made it actually worse for him, because he's just, the ball sort of come to him rather than him trying to create a bit of space or anything. And I think the Bonnie Wright commentary actually said it as well at the time, that anywhere other than towards the keeper, and it's probably a goal. But yeah, he'd have been probably looking back on it. I think Rory will be a wee bit disappointed that he's not scored that one.
And I think as well he'll get a lot of those chances from Joe McKee's set pieces, because once again for me, Joe McKee was so good. He wasn't a standout by any stretch of the imagination. There were obviously players who had better performances for him, but in the role that he's got, if he's just breaking up the play, you know, playing those passes, free kicks, corners and things like that, we've got a player and a half we have in the squad.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with him. I mean, when we watched him against the Aberdeen B side, I thought he hardly put a foot wrong. And again, having watched him closely again on Saturday, didn't I really think he did anything wrong. He breaks up the game nicely. I wouldn't say he's a player of a limited ability. That's not the right term, but he knows what he's good at, and he can pick out a pass, and he gives it to these players like, so your Hamish Ritchies and your Kieran Shank, guys who can create something out of nothing. And he knows what he's good at. He gives them the ball and says, right, you go do your bit, I've done my bit. And yeah, I think him and Andy in the midfield as a duo, I certainly think that's something maybe long term that Ryan and Jordan might look at. And for me, Joe was one of the best players in the park on Saturday.
Yeah, and again, he just made Andy McCarthy allow him to go forward, do what he is now enjoying, what he's doing as well, is getting forward, creating opportunities for other people, and maybe creating opportunities for himself as well.
Something we spoke about the other week, you know, that freedom that Andy McCarthy is maybe going to hate going forward. Doesn't really have to worry too much about what's happening behind him. When you've got a player like Joe McKee able to sweep everything up. And yeah, allowing Andy just to break into that attacking third, running from deep, I think will work well as well.
And second half was much better. I don't know what Jordan and Ryan had said to them at half time, but they certainly came out the better side. And, you know, once the changes were made, Jack Brown coming on and then Hamish Ritchie coming on as well, suddenly the balance was there, and you could see straight away just having those two on the park, you know, Jack giving you that energy and that determination, and Hamish with his trickery and his wing play, suddenly we were, you know, a much better side, and it was a totally different game altogether.
Yeah, like you said, I think the balance was right once Hamish and Jack came on. I think the performance up until the hour mark, until they came on, was probably what Ryan and Jordan were looking for. Maybe slightly under in terms of that we were in the game, we were playing okay, but weren't really causing them too much problems. But then once Jack and Hamish came on, that was sort of the, almost like the shackles came off. It's like, right, they're there for the taking. Let's go and try and win the game. And, you know, we've seen with Hamish, his first couple of touches, it was all forward, it was all taking people on. And yeah, I think we were critical of Hamish a couple of weeks back at home. We thought he was slightly off it. He was opposite on Saturday, came on for the last 20, 25 minutes. And, you know, he was the difference between the two sides.
And it was telt as well, he's carrying an injury, that hence why he wasn't starting. But if that's him carrying an injury, by Christ, he's got to be some player if he's once he's fully fit again.
Yeah, I'd say the thing with players like Hamish Ritchie, when they're carrying a knock, it can make a big difference to them. And, you know, if that's the sort of performance we get when he's not quite fully fit, then you wouldn't want to be a defender in League Two over the next couple of months.
And once he was on and playing on the right-hand side, you could see straight away as well, Danny Strachan had more confidence to get himself going forward and offering those overlap runs as well, which, as you said earlier on, because Jordan kept sort of drifting in, that wasn't really much of an option for him. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're getting the full-backs coming forward and Jordan Armstrong at the other side, who I thought had a fine game as well. slowly becoming a regular and starting to see the best of him as well. We were getting men forward and getting men at the box, which we've said for weeks and for months at the end of last season. It sounds so basic, but it's good to see.
It was difficult for Danny in the first half. I think with Jordan playing in front of him and Jordan naturally drifting inside, I think Danny was sort of caught in between a rock and a hard place. Well, do you then go and overlap Jordan, but then you leave the space in behind, and then you can get caught in the counter so easily, or you can get picked off at ease. Once Hamish came on, I think them two have got a good understanding anyway, having played a lot of times before, and it just seemed so natural and so easy for Danny to sort of push forward and overlap Hamish, and they knew when to go, when to stay, when to cut inside. And I think, you mentioned it a couple of minutes ago, we got the balances bang on once Hamish and Jack came on, and we reaped the rewards of that.
And within minutes of the two of them coming on, it was the two subs that combined for the opening goal. Jack Brown setting up Hamish Ritchie for a wonderful finish in just inside the box with his left foot. Really, really composed, really calm. I mean, you watch it, he looks as though he's taken about half an hour to decide what he's doing. But he's got the time and he's got the composure to be able to take his time and near rush it either.
Yeah, you could ask him to do that 100 times, and I dare say there's very few opportunities where he actually puts it top bins like he did. And I think you could get to many other players on the team as well. They would all blaze it over and get a rush of blood to the head. But I think it's the way he's just killed the ball, almost dead as he's taken it in on his left foot. He just stops the ball and curls it. You could put two goalkeepers in the nets. And then I think there's two of them saving that. And I think at that point as well, we're worthy of the lead. Fantastic finish by Hamish Ritchie.
As soon as it leaves his feet, you can't miss a goal because there's nobody going to be stopping that. The way he hits it, the way he gets the curl and the dip on it as well, he's the ideal person to be hitting it for there, especially on his so-called weaker foot as well.
Yeah, he's carrying an injury and he does that with his weaker foot. So, yeah, really looking forward to see what he does over the next couple of months. But, like I say, as you've said there, it's a very composed finish. He's got his body over it so easily to lean back and just blaze it over the bar. And that's what we're needing at that stage, somebody with a calm head, and he's put it in the top corner.
And it comes from Jack Brown, as I said, not giving it up, winning the ball back inside the 18-yard box. Just he just gives you something different. This Jack, I mean, he's obviously a good player, but he just, when I give up, he when I allow folk to have time on the ball, and he might get that once a game, or once every sort of three or four games, but he'll keep working and keep working, and that little things, that sort of energy and fight and effort will work. We'll get the what's the word I'm looking for? Getting the rewards for it.
Yeah, it must be a nightmare to play against because he doesn't give you a minute's peace. He always seems to be everywhere on the park. As you said, if it hadn't have been for him sort of chasing things down and trying to win the ball back, then they've got an easy clearance down the park and they can move 20, 30 yards further up and then the chance is gone. So it was his tenacity to try and get the ball back and then it's gone across to Hamish Ritchie. And yeah, the two of them substitutes combine well. As I said, I think we're worthy of the lead at that stage as well.
And it was a case that Bonnyrigg really didn't create too much second half. They did get an equaliser via the penalty. Now, we're all baffled at the time, having seen the highlights, we're still kind of baffled. I can see what he's given and why he's given it. However, I would suggest as well that the Bonnyrigg player has gone down rather easily. And I would suggest as well that if you look at the clip, there's about three or four other players doing exactly the same thing as what Jordan Armstrong was allegedly doing. I think it's just a case that because the Bonnyrigg guy had gone down, it was deemed a penalty.
I think, first of all, the referee's got a really, really good view of it. Some surprises being given, if I'm being honest. Yeah, it's a bit of jostling in the box. There is arms up, but my word. I think if you're given a penalty for that, you're given a lot of penalties in games. And yeah, I'm not just saying it sounds like sour grapes, but I don't think it's a penalty. Because I think you're given a lot of penalties through the season and in every game if that is a penalty. I think there was probably worse challenges it was in the game that the referee played on with. But if we're given a foul for that in the box, my word, it's got to be a long season.
Yeah, and usually when you see something like that happening, prior to that you would see the referee speaking to somebody and saying, look, keep your hands down, this will be a free kick, or this will be a penalty next time, whatever. But I don't think there was even a conversation prior to that. There was very few corners in the game anyway. But it was just a case like that, right, that's a penalty, and then nearly give a penalty, but he booked Jordan Armstrong for it as well.
So, watching it live, I thought there must have been more to it than what there was, because the referee gave it so, so quickly. It was almost adamant, the way he pointed, the strong whistle, the point, I thought he must be 100% certain. Having watched the highlights back, I must have watched it about 10 times, and I struggle to see why he's so certain it's a penalty, but evidently he's a lot closer than what we were on Saturday, and he's a lot closer than what we can see in the camera highlights as well. But I thought it was more clear and obvious than it maybe was, but yeah, looking back at it, I'm still a bit baffled as to how there's a penalty, but you know, the way he gave it so confidently, he must have seen something that we haven't.
And it was slotted home, and then with less than 10 minutes to go, you think to yourself, well, that's it, we're maybe blowing it. But as we said earlier on, the guys kept going, they kept digging in. And then up at the other end, we've got 2 minutes to go, we get ourselves a penalty as well. And I would say as well, when I saw this one live, I thought it was a soft one. However, again, having seen the highlights and having heard from even the Bonnyrigg manager, he said that the players were pretty certain it was a penalty. And again, looking at their reactions and the highlights, that would suggest it probably was a penalty.
Yeah, my first view, and a bit like yourself, I thought it was soft. Having looked at it back, I still think it's a bit soft. I think it's a penalty. Mm-hmm. But again, if you're given that, I mean, the referee had a really good view. Again, he was very quick to give the penalty. You look at players' reaction, there's not many players that complain towards the referee either, so that sort of gives you a big indication. But on the first view, when I thought it was soft, I didn't think we were going to get it. But, you know, we'll take it, that's for sure.
Yeah, as I said, the Bonnyrigg reaction was head in their hands kind of reaction, thinking that was a mistake, and probably means that it was more of a penalty than it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, you can see what he's trying to do. The defender's just trying to clear the ball out of the park. Rory's got his foot in between player and ball, and, you know, the defender's just taken, you know, ball second, but he's taken Rory McAllister first. Rory's going down. He hasn't made a meal of it, but he's made sure the referee fires only a couple of yards away, being very aware that he's been caught. And rightly so. You know, you've got to make sure the referee's aware of these things. And yeah, we'll gladly take the penalty.
And as Rory confirmed on Friday night, that Kieran Shanks is still on the penalties until he misses. So he's still on the penalties for the next game at least, because it was a good finish for him as well. Firing it. A lot of pressure, a pressure penalty late on in the game. Probably it would be have been the winner if he had scored it. If he missed it, there's likelihood that was probably going to be the game over. But a really good penalty from him.
Yeah, and I think there's even slightly more pressure if you cast your mind back to last season when he missed a penalty late on in the game as well. If I can't remember, somebody else wanted to take it and he sort of pulled rank and got it but then missed the subsequent penalty. So especially when you've got a player like Rory McAllister for UK and is watching for just a couple of yards behind you, but a very composed finish, and you can tell he enjoyed that by the celebration as well.
Yeah, and it was I think that was pretty much game over, but we could have even gone further ahead. Shanks had won off the line, again great play down the right hand side it falls to Robert Ward, who'd come off the bench as well, and Rory McAllister free on the edge of the 18-yard box, and it's what we're saying earlier on about him being more unselfish now and looking to create more chances than he will maybe potentially score. And I think he probably does the right thing, because it beats the keeper, Shanks beats the keeper, but it's just the defender had made a run onto the line and stopped it for Ginnan.
Yeah, like you said, Rory's he's sort of said that this season, that he's quite happy to score all the goals but try and share them out, and he's quite happy just to help the team out. I think he made the right decision for that one, and then all of a sudden the defender came out of nowhere and cleared it. But I don't think 3-1 on the day would have I don't think it would have flattered us. I think we'd have been worthy winners of the 3-1. I think we created some good chances through the game, maybe not clear cut, but certainly good chances. But whilst it was 2-1, even that late on, yeah, it was felt that there might have been a chance for Bonnie Wright, but thankfully we managed to hold on for the 3 points.
And what did you make of the front two combination then of Shanks and McArthur? That's a couple of games now that they've played together. It seems to be that they've already sparked up a good understanding. I think it's clear that McArthur will be the focal point in terms of being like the target man. Shanks will be doing a lot of the runs in between centre halves or in between the full back and the centre halves, if they're playing a back five or a back four. And I think that'll take a lot of the pressure off a Shanks a little bit as well, because as much as we praised him for his energy and his work rate when he was playing up on his own in a 4-2-3-1, I think this will allow him just to play his own game and get in any of those areas where he can get those goal scoring opportunities.
I think strikers always judge themselves on how many goals and assists they get throughout the season. I think a lot of Kieran's work on the park is sometimes not reflected by the goals and the assists that he does get. As you said, he did a lot of running about, a lot of work for the team, but sometimes his neighbours get the rewards. I think, especially second half, I think the two of them linked up really well. First half, maybe early on in the first half, first 15, 20 minutes, I think there was maybe too far apart at times. But I certainly think the second half, much closer, and it worked well. And I think it's only going to get better as the season goes on, once they've trained more and played together in games more. And then I think the combination will work well. I think, as you said, Kieran, when I feel the pressure as much, having Rory up there with him, an experienced striker, somebody who kins the club and who kins the league, you know, inside out, will benefit both players. And I think Kieran can learn a lot for Rory as well. And not just Kieran as a striker, but I think you've got the likes of your wingers as well, Conor O'Keefe and Robert Ward. They can learn for, you know, a player with Rory's experience of being an attacking player. So I think overall, the four of them, it'll work well.
Well, Kieran's on 5 goals and 2 assists already. McArthur already being back, he's got 2 assists, potentially 3, if you include the penalty award, and I kind of how that potentially works. But already it seems to be working, and it's I think a lot of teams will struggle to play against him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of the little man, large man, is it? The two up top, your target man knocking it down for a quick striker. I don't think there's many teams that play with two up top anyway. So I think the fact that you've got these two guys playing, with, like you said, with the experience and McAllister and the pace and the work ethic of Kieran Shanks, I think the two of them will link up really well.
Right, let's get some of your thoughts on the set of this game then. We'll start with Jason Argo. I thought we kept the ball well. Players moved into space and passed the ball well. We deserved the win despite playing against 12 men. Substitutions were inspired. And I think that's a good point as well about the substitutions. You know, we talk about how deep the squad is now, but it's making the right substitutions at the right time.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think they've got to time the substitutions just right. I think we've mentioned that before. Robert Ward's maybe going to be better as an impact player coming on towards the end of a game when defences are tiring. I think the substitutions of Jack and Hamish coming on Saturday, the timing of it, the players that they came on for, gave us that nice balance that then happened. So, yeah, I think that the timing of it is crucial. But, you know, when you've got a squad like ours and the quality that I think we've got throughout it, this season, I certainly think that we're in a good place when it comes to making substitutions as compared to last season when you looked at the bench and you really struggled to see who could change the game.
Yeah, Jason also goes on to say, great to see a big crowd at Balmoor. And no matter what Colin says, it was too cold for shots. So ladies and gentlemen, that'll be the last time you'll be hearing from Jason Argo's comments from us. I used to like him. Yeah, no. Slagged my shots. Last time I mentioned his beard again as well. Peter Bruce, excellent team performance. A very strong squad now. And you'll see the subs bench, as you've seen from the subs bench today. Such a relief to get a home win. No doubt about it. Rory's going to be a great addition to the team. Danielle Ritchie deserved the win. Had to play against Boyan Rigg and the referee. Referee made it hard, hard watch. At times, Andrew Milne absolutely deserved the win. Fantastic football played, even with an absolute shambolic display from the referee. One of the worst I've ever seen. Players dug deep and created some great chances. Let's build on this and get the results coming in. Wayne Simpson deserved to win today, by far the better team. Some great passing from front to back. Not sure what happened for their pen, but delighted that we got a pen and the 3 points. Graham McLean, Danny Strachan for me was man of the match. Ref lost it a bit in the second half, easily conned, but good 3 points on to Dumbarton. Keith Leslie, Danny Strachan in his natural position is as good as a fullback in the league. Boy is better than most of them on the left. Two, Ethan Massey, again, talking about Danny Strachan, thought Danny was excellent today and should have been man of the match. Ryan was solid at the back line. Think we deserve more than just the 2 goals. And again, you know, praise for Danny Strachan, and quite rightly as well. You know, we're not ashamed to say it, but we're big fans of Danny Strachan. But it's good to see a lot of folk realising that it's not just all about, you know, the forward players and the attacking players. Danny does a lot of work up and doing that right hand side as well.
Yeah, I think Danny came in for a wee bit of stick, maybe, what is it, 14, 15 months ago. I think some people were just so blinkered that they couldn't see that there's a good player there. And Danny gives you that width. He can play in numerous different positions. You know, and he loves the club. And you can see that way, some of the performances that come in as well. I certainly think we're a better team than he's. We're right back. I think he gives you that balance. And, yeah, I use balance a lot because Danny will play anywhere you put him in the park. He'll probably play in goals if you asked him to. But he can do right back very, very comfortably. He can also do left back, but I think you'll lose part of what Danny is in terms of his ability to go up and down the park. Put him at right back, and yeah, I think arguably he's one of the better players at Wigan Saturday in the park.
I think it's maybe more of a confidence thing if he's playing at left back, because I think there's very few right footed players that can play at left back very well. I mean, Dennis Irwin comes to mind, and that's going back a fair while. But other than that, there are very few that are outstanding at left back who are a right footed player. But certainly, you know, if he can add that string to his bow and keep going, there's no reason why he shouldn't be one of the first names on the team sheet, because he's certainly putting in the performances. And as much as praise as Caleb Goldie was getting at the beginning of the season, he's keeping him out of the team.
The worrying thing with that sentence there is, if people listen to this, then I came for Dennis Irwin. That is the sad thing about this. Then I came Google it, one of the best players that was played for Man United back in the 90s. But yeah, when it comes to right footed players playing left back, I can imagine it's a very difficult role, because it's not that you're naturally used to, it's how you open up your body. And I think we mentioned this right at Jordan Armstrong's in his early appearances for us, in terms of he's all left footed. If he gets the ball, opens up his body in his right foot, he always wants to play that left footed square ball rather than, you know, chipping it down the line with his right foot. And again, it goes down to what a player's confident in. And I certainly think Danny playing at right back is a much better player than what he is at left back. He's still a very good left back, but confidence is massive. And yeah, like I said, I think he's one of our better players on Saturday.
Right, so some of the comments there had touched on the referee's performance. We have deliberately not mentioned him throughout the sort of review of the game, because it was just so bad. I think it's worth looking at it in a bit more depth. So Ross Clark, that was his first game at Balmoral. It was just his second game at this level. I know he did the game against the Aberdeen B in the Challenge Cup earlier on, but it was just his second league game at this level. And I think it showed. There was a lot of stopped starting. He, for some reason, wanted to talk to players when it was necessary. He wanted to stop the game for reasons which were quite baffling a couple of times. In fact, I think both goalkeepers had to do a bounce ball because he stopped the game for no reason whatsoever. Dished out 7 yellow cards as well, and we probably go through those 7 yellow cards and probably say that neither of them were justified, and also book one of the coaches. I'm not sure if it was one of the coaches or if it was the manager himself. I wasn't quite sure. But really, you know, we said over the last, you know, year and a bit, maybe 2 years, how the standard of the refereeing seems to have gone downhill. But this particular performance for me has to be the worst that I've seen in a long time. And it was getting to the stage where it was laughable.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for trying to, you know, encourage referees in the terms of, without referees, we didn't have a game to go and watch on a Saturday. And I get that. And evidently, he's a new referee or an up-and-coming referee, and he's trying to make his way in the game. And you look at certain referees over the years, and you think, right, that's a good referee is a referee that you didn't came was at the game. They allow the game to flow, and you yada, 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 whack him if it makes a good referee. But on Saturday, there were so many things, you know, in terms of, he wanted, as you mentioned, he wanted to talk to every player about everything. And it's like, well, you didn't need to talk to every player about every decision that you've made. If you set your stall out nice and early, right, the players will soon catch on, the referees going to get a stand for that. The nonsense of the drop balls, I guess it's probably rule aid, the bloody, bloody, blah, that they have to do a drop ball. But at times, you can't just let the game flow. You know, this used to be a rule that the keepers only had 6 seconds to handle the ball and to clear it. Whether that rule now changed or whether it's just not enforced, I don't know. But at times you can just say, right, keeper's got the ball. Is the player okay? Yeah, right, just play on. Just make it well known. And one of the things I had to laugh at, the referee had stopped the game, and then he's walking back, and then he sort of blows his whistle and then waves for the goalkeeper to take his goal kick. Well, it was the referee that stopped the game with his whistle to say, right, can I take the goal kick? I'm walking back. And it was you that mentioned it, and you said, it was you that stopped the game.
Yeah.
Little things like that. And obviously, if you take them in isolation, you probably think, well, you're getting annoyed about that for it. But it was just in terms of, I've forgotten who it was. Was it Andy McCarthy got almost kicked in the face, and we didn't get nothing. And then 2 minutes later, there's absolutely nothing. Nobody appeals for it, and he gets a free kick. It was so stop start, there was no flow to it. He was given decisions that nobody appealed for. Everybody thinks it's a Peterhead ball, and he gives it to Bonnie Rigg. You know, spoke to somebody on Saturday within the club, and they said they were making it all about them, like making it all about the refereeing. Like I said, a good referee is one that you didn't really hear of, or you kind of remember his performance. Well, Ross Clark will certainly remember his performance for Saturday. But also, going back to the Peterhead game with Aberdeen B side, there's a couple of bad ones in that game that he didn't pull up. So, yeah, it's certainly one to look at. I think referees do need a bit of help at times. But by the same token, when you're putting in performances like that, you can see why they also get a wee bit of stick.
I would say as well, and this is something that I've mentioned before, you see these young referees coming up the ranks, and I think Andrew Dallas, when he first sort of came into it, I think it was well known he was fast-tracked to the top end of the game, and he'd be one who'd want to talk all the time and want to kind of stamp his authority and almost demand the respect from the players because he thinks he's being authoritative. But I think in that kind of sense, you earn the respect from the players and the management team first. That doesn't come after the first blow of the whistle. And I think this is a case that Ross Clark was doing the same thing. I think he was almost trying to stamp his authority on a game that really didn't need to be stamped on. If you can, it's a kind of game where, if you just let it go for the first sort of 5, 10, 15 minutes, see how it goes, and then you maybe need to get your authority into it. But it's not a, you know, it's not a Scotland England game. It's not a, you know, Champions League final or something like that. No, it's with all due respect, it's Peterhead against Bonnie Rigg in League Two. it's not going to be a, it's not, it's not a high profile game. But what he's doing is he's making it, as you said, he's making it all about him.
There was 7 yellow cards in the game, 5 for Peter Reid, 2 for Bonnie Wright, plus the Bonnie Wright coaching staff. Again, unlike you, I'm not sure whether it was manager or the coach. And I think there was maybe only 2 bad challenges in the game, but ironically, neither of them players got a booking for it.
Yeah, and you missed one of them, what you said was the high foot, which really should have been a free kick, yeah. Possibly even a red card if he was refereeing it properly.
Exactly. If he was doing it properly, you'd probably look at that and go, it's high foot, endangering opposition, it maybe is a red card. I don't think it was a dirty game, but you look on the outside, 7 yellow cards. It could have, on the outside, you maybe think it is a dirty game. I think the referee, he's trying to stamp his authority. I get that. It's his prerogative. He's a referee. He can do that if he wants to. But he lost it in the first 15, 20 minutes because he wasn't a referee in the game with consistency. So what was a foul in the 3rd minute wasn't exactly a foul in the 7th minute. And I think as a referee, once you do that and then you start to lose control of the game and you're chasing a player to give him a booking, that's when you've lost the... We speak about managers losing the dressing. That's when the referee sort of lost it and then he's chasing players to give yellows. And I think he was almost trying to claw back that respect that he'd sort of lost or what demanded that he was getting for the players. And it just didn't really work out for him. And in the end, he went a wee bit card happy in a game which I didn't really think there was no need for 7 yellow cards in that game, to be honest.
Yeah, there was, I think, around about 40 fouls given in the game. Now, you think 40 fouls in a game that's 90 minutes, you know, you're almost one every 2 minutes sort of thing. So the game doesn't get any time to flow.
Yeah, and players want to play in a nice free-flowing game. Like we've said before, you know, it's a fantastic pitch to play on. It's set up to play good football on, but when the referees stop starting the game, it makes it difficult. And I'm pleased that we're being able to bring this up in the back of a win. You know, people can look at it and think, well, you've been beaten, we're blaming the referee. This goes further back than just one poor performance. I think the standard of refereeing in the last year is certainly not improved. Whether you can argue it's gotten worse, that's up to, you know, people listening, but I certainly don't think it's improved any. And obviously, if there's no referees, we've now got a game to watch, and they do need the help and the support. But again, this is when you look at your match delegates, your match observers. Are they rating that performance and thinking, yeah, well done, you've done well, you pass, or do you go, well, actually, you sort of lost control of the game a wee bit, this is how we can do it. You know, we've mentioned before, a referee's a bad performance. Ross Clark will referee next week, but a bad performance can cost a manager his job or a player a suspension. And I just think there needs to be more of an in-depth look. Not just at that particular referee, but maybe just refereeing as a general across the board.
And I think we will, particularly this season now, we're back in League 2, I think we will see, looking for a better phrase here, but we will see the worst of the worst in terms of the referees this season because... you know, the so-called better ones will be League One or Championship. But I do think we will see a lot of performances like that. And I just hope that we didn't come on here at some point in the season where we're speaking about a refereeing performance because it's maybe cost us a game or it's maybe cost us a point, it's maybe cost us a win.
Yeah, and that's going to. I think it will happen at some point. There'll be a refereeing decision that we've never agreed with and... You know, it's gone against us. Like I said, I think referees, they do need help and support. It's difficult. It's okay for us to sit here and criticise. We've never done the courses that they do. But, you know, they also get paid to do the game. And again, if you and I weren't doing our job right at our work, we'd be under severe scrutiny and criticism. I don't think the referees should be, you know, getting away with it scot-free. You know, and I do think... Not just, like I said, not just that particular game, that particular referee, but I just think there has been, you know, we spoke yesterday, there's a thing on the Pie and Bovril website that there's, you know, a few people mention about refereeing, just a standard as a generalisation. Very few comments are, you know, painting it in positive light, a lot of negativity, but, you know, these guys do need help and support if they can get it.
Yeah, so we'll see if Ross Clark does another Peter Reid game and we'll see what the like his performance is.
Guaranteed he's at Dumbarton on Saturday.
surely no. I think genuinely there's a rule somewhere you can't have the same team 2 weeks in a row. So hopefully that's not just a made up rule I had in my head, or a mere of clutching at straws more than anything else. But I think that's wouldn't be the case. So, but as you said, we're on to Dumbarton now on Saturday. We're back on our travels down to Dumbarton, and we are. This is one of the teams who are currently joint top on 11 points, so we're just a point behind them. One of four teams now on 11 points. And we should say as well, we got the win on Saturday, but the results went our way as well, because the top teams all lost as well. So that was also a great help for us. It means that we're just a point behind it. And just you look at the Spartans one, you go, oh, well, if we just maybe picked up a point there, we would have been right amongst it again at the top. But here's a chance for us to go to Dumbarton and keep the momentum going. As I said, they're joint top on 11 points. They started off with two draws, and then they won three in a row, but surprisingly lost on Saturday to Elgin, away from home 2-0. So maybe just a little bit maybe inconsistent for Dumbarton already, but as we said before, you know, it's just probably going to be a league, and it's probably going to be a season where everybody can beat anybody. And, you know, the start that Elgin's had, that probably was a surprising result, even though it was up at Elgin.
Yeah, I think they're doing a few people. They caught out in the coupons by Dumbarton, they managing to get 3 points at Elgin. Probably one of them you look for the outside and go, yeah, Dumbarton probably strong favourites for that. Even in a division where we think it'll be really tight, you'd have fancied Dumbarton to go there and, you know, get the win on the, you know, back of their previous couple of results that they've had. I think normally you would go into an away game thinking you've got to keep it tight, and you'd maybe be a wee bit apprehensive at times going into an away game. But the way we've started the season, especially away from home, also the back of the cup win, you know, last week away from home, certainly don't think we've got anything to fear. I think at times this season playing away from home might suit us. It allows Dumbarton to come out and, you know, play against us. And we can pick them off on the counter. We've got two really good strikers with Kieran Shanks and Rory McAllister. We can change it up. And I think it's a game that we should be confident going into.
They've got a lot of players that are fairly familiar to us, or fairly familiar to the league, and League One, League Two, you know, like Sean Crichton, Mark Darnan, James Hilton, Ross McLean, Michael Ruth, and of course Brett Long, who was had a season with us as well. So a lot of experienced players, a lot of players that know this level, know how to win games at this level, and that could be crucial for them if they are to kind of kick on it and try and finish at the top end as they did last season.
Yeah, when I was doing my notes, Dumbarton and I was writing as season pros, because you've got guys that have been around the divisions. They can how to win games, they can how to see their way around 90 minutes on the park, and, you know, they're very astute. I think they will be up there or thereabouts come the end of the season. Okay, they've had a wee bit of a wobble to start with, but, you know, I think every team in this division is going to go through that period, you know, throughout the season, where it's going to be difficult to try and get wins. But you're hoping that you're going to go down there on Saturday and allow Dumbarton the win. You've got to be at them nice and early, get in their faces, and, you know, make them know that they're in a game, even though they're the home side. Like I said, I don't think we should have anything to fear going down there.
Last five results against Dumbarton, it's been two wins, two draws, two wins, two losses, and one draw. So fairly even in the last sort of few seasons. The last time we went down there was a 1-1 draw in April 2022. Josh Oyenson scoring for Dumbarton, and Russell McLean scoring for Peterhead. So that was the last time we were doing there. But obviously, you know, both squads, both teams have had massive changes in that time. There is an argument if you're looking at the result in the game from Saturday. Obviously, there was no changes from the starting lineup from the previous game. You look at it and you go, well, you know, Hamish Ritchie and Jack Brown, are they worthy starters? They probably are, but who do you bring off? And that's the predicament that Jordan and Ryan have got.
Yeah, well, I said to you on Saturday, when you read the team lineups, I was surprised that Ryan and Jordan were both in the park again. They were kind of different cup game that they both played. I was surprised for the league game that, you know, there wasn't one of them in the dugout, which we came that they tried today. And again, it's a really good point. When I lost the game, so do you change a winning side? But then you've got players like Jack and Hamish that came off the bench and did exactly what was required of them. They've got involved in the game. They've got an assist and a goal. They've combined well, exactly what the manager would have wanted for them coming off the bench. Are they worthy of a shout of coming in? We felt that the balance was right once they did come on. And yeah, this is probably one of the team selections that Ryan and Jordan's got to look at and go, well, somebody's going to get to be happy, whether it's one of the managers that drop out. Do you leave Hamish and Jack sitting on the bench again? And, you know, thankfully it's their decision and not yours.
Yeah, and you also got the options of, you know, the different formations as well. They obviously played 4-4-2 last couple of games because it's away from home against Dumbarton. They could maybe switch it up and revert back to a 4-2-3-1, keep it a wee bit more tighter. But these, as you said, these are the decisions it's out of our hands. But it's really fascinating to see how they go about it for this week and leading up to the game, because it's so different from what we've been used to in terms of, oh, we'll just play the same formation and the same players. Now we've got a squad and we've got a team that we then again, Fahd's actually going to be starting.
Yeah, from a tactical point of view, it's fascinating because you've now got a team that's won back-to-back games. Do you then change it? Do you then leave it as it is? You're always told, if it ain't broke, you don't need to try and fix it. So do you need to make changes? But then you've got two guys that were on the bench that exactly what was asked of them. You know, even the Dumbarton manager, he's going to be looking at us going, well, what sort of Peterhead are we going to be facing? Will they make changes? So it's difficult for them to sort of prep and plan as well. So yeah, I think we've mentioned before, last season, you could almost write the team. You couldn't exactly who's going to be playing regardless of what form they were in. Now it's completely different. You might have two guys that have come off the bench, done their job that was required, and still may get back in the starting 11. And that's what makes it a really fascinating, intriguing watch by Ryan and Jordan what they're trying to do.
Yeah, you'd obviously have to see how Hamish is during the week in terms of his injury. But you know, if he's fully fit, surely he's got to be one of the starters.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, you've also got on the opposite flank, you've got guys like Robert Ward. You know, if he's good in training Tuesday, Thursday, does then he stake a claim for getting into the squad, and then somebody else has been left out? Yeah, I think, as we've mentioned, we've got a squad now that's capable of numerous changes, and you don't feel the impact of it, and, you know, that can only benefit us.
And depending on how the results go again, you know, we could go from fifth right up to the top as well, and just showing you how tight this league is going to be.
I think Jordan mentioned it, on Saturday, that, you know, you didn't really take much notice of the table until everybody's played a round. So once everybody's played each other, then you start to see how the league's going to shape up. I think the only one that is Clyde at the bottom, they seem to be the one that's really struggling, whereas everybody else is picking up points and chipping away. So it's a fascinating start to the season, and I'm just really pleased that we're in that conversation even this early on.
Right now, joining me on the Blue Team podcast to talk about the Saturday's game at Dumbarton from the Rock and Gold podcast himself, it's Fraser Clark. Fraser, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Hi, I'm very good. Thank you very much for having me. I'm kind of ticking off clubs that I've done like media stuff for, and Peterhead's a new one, so it's like Peterhead, Alloa, Clyde. You know, I've got this real lower league nomadic sort of journeyman career going on.
You come highly recommended, that's what it is.
That's it. I'll put in like 6 good games and that'll be enough to win me a contract next season. It's someone else in league 2.
Yeah, that's what it'll be. Well, hopefully, I mean, did I take this the wrong way, but hopefully I did I see you next season.
Or it's a cup game.
Or it's a cup game, perhaps.
Or we both go up.
Well, yeah, there is that to it. You never know. But then let's talk about Dumbarton's season then so far. Off the back of great disappointment, I guess, the way the last season ended, you've started off pretty well again this season.
Yeah, last season was really, really odd, because if you look at it statistically, it was record-breaking. I think more clean sheets than we'd had at any other point in history. Brett Long certainly set a record for individual clean sheets, 7 consecutive wins to start the season. And yet it never really felt like everybody was fully on board. And then that end of the season, I mean, from about February onwards, the form just dropped off a cliff. And there was a spell where Suns basically ran out of players and they had maybe 2 subs available to them. Okay, that's kind of excusable. But then to go into the playoffs, pretty much back to full strength. And we all know what happened with Annan and the sort of 6-0 first leg defeat there. I mean, that was a real sort of dark way to end that season. And I think this season, and certainly Suns generally, there's a real disconnect between Stevie Farrell and between the fans. And I would say that stems from the relegation season. And I mean, you know yourself, when a manager takes the team down, it's probably quite difficult for him to win back a certain element of support when he doesn't have credit in the bank. And Stevie Farrell maybe used up his credit in that first season. Even when he built it back up at the start of last season, there was people, you know, we'd lost between the start of the season and January, we'd lost two games. One was 6-0 to Stirling Albion, to be fair. But two games in that spell between July and January, and fans were still going, as soon as we lose a game, this is going to collapse. Like, we're not convinced. So we gave them the new deal. The season went downhill. And I think this season it almost feels similar in that the start has been decent enough. Like, no other team's done a great deal more than Suns have this season. Performances have been, by and large, we'll maybe touch on Elgin later, but performances have been, by and large, pretty good. But everyone's still in that sort of mindset, like, it's all going to crumble. And if you look on Time Bravo or on Twitter to the reaction to Saturday's game up at Elgin, it's almost like that Old Firm mentality. When they lose a game, it's like, that's it, it's the end of the world, and it's total chaos. And that's kind of where it feels like Suns are again.
Is there maybe an element that, it doesn't matter what happens, some of the supporters just want to get rid of Stevie Farrell?
Yeah, 100%. And I saw a fan last season, so I did a podcast with Craig Telfer about February, just as it started to go a wee bit kind of off the rails. And there was a fan that said, even if Farrell takes us back up, all he's done is take us to where he was when he started. So he's like, no credit in the bank for him from that. that's quite harsh. But, you know, I feel for Faz because I get on really well with him. And he, like, you know, he kicks every ball. He's so, so passionate about the club. And you can tell he's hurting after a defeat. But there's an element of the support that he will not win over. I mean, he could have won all 36 games this season, and there still would have been fans who said, oh, he only did it because he had the best squad, he only did it because of this happened, or we got a dodgy decision in this game. And it's a really weird, weird situation where we have got a strong squad, we have started the season well, but it doesn't feel like there's much of a feel-good factor about the place.
It's almost like that, the element of, you know, we've won a game 5-0, but then some folk will say, ah, we should have won it 6-0 or 7-0. We'll never be happy.
No, that's it. We won a game, so when we beat Stenishmuir 4-2 a couple of weeks ago, and it was 4-0 at half-time, and Suns kind of took their foot off the gas in the second half, as you would see most teams do. I mean, you're 4-0 up at half-time, just get out there with the victory, and they made it 4-1, and Matty Aitken scored, I think, 96th minute, like the last touch of the ball to make it 4-2. And the topic of conversation afterwards, like, very, very little was said about the first half. It was all, that second half was, you know, it was right below par. I don't know what happened there, the drop-off. It's like, gone to Ockelview, scored 4 goals against a really good Steny team, who I think are going to be up there at the end of the season. And maybe we just need a wee reality check that any of our fans would have jumped at a 1-0. So to go and get a 4-2, yeah, like, you would have bitten your hand off for that beforehand.
Yeah, you mentioned the squad. Some of the players that you've got within that squad, really good pros, really know this level well. Is that going to bode well for you for the remainder of the season, do you think?
I like the feeling of this squad. I like some of the characters in it. So you're looking, you know, Sean Crichton and Mark Dernan as your two linchpin centre-halves, captain and vice-captain. I just think they're really good guys to have around the place. Like, you hear them on the pitch, they're very vocal. Off the park, I just like they cut their jib, I like the way they talk, you know, I like the way they act. I think they both very much lead by example, and they strike me as sort of guys who aren't going to take too much in the dressing room. You know, if somebody starts kicking off, they'll be the ones to either put an arm around them or to give them a wee bit back and just try and keep everything in check. And I think that's maybe something Suns lacked last season. You look right throughout the squad, though, like you say, and he says going out on a limb. I don't think there's a better squad on paper in the league. I think there's better players and positions in the league. But if you look at the squad depth that Suns had at the weekend and the subs they were able to make, it didn't make any difference because they lost 2-0. But if you look at the squad depth that Suns had at the weekend, there aren't very many teams who have that many players in their squad who are tried and tested and proven at this sort of level. And yeah, I think it stems from the two centre-halves in Crichton and Dernan in terms of that experience, and like, they'll sort of push that throughout the team. But I'm really happy with where the squad's at the moment, and the only thing that's maybe missing is a clinical striker. But how many teams can say that? Not you. You're all right. But
we eventually got him back. Yeah. we talk about the game on Saturday off the back of, I think it was 3 league wins in it on the bounce up to Elgin, a bit of a coop and buster.
Yeah, I think that ruined a lot of people's Saturday afternoons. I mean, it ruined mine, but it ruined a lot more people's a lot worse, I think, based on the amount of money that they lost out on. It was just, it was really, really flat. And it was probably, because I did a wee bit of like noting down what I was going to say here, and it was probably the first time all season that I'd been A, disappointed with the performance, and B, that we've came out of the game and gone, nah, didn't deserve anything. Now, what I would say is, it felt like the sort of game that if Suns had taken the lead, they probably would have maybe done what Elgin had done and put on a solid, unspectacular 7 out of 10 performance and got a 2-0 win, go down the road with that. They did, which is becoming their sort of trait this season, of create and then miss really, really good opportunities. Ross McLean skewed one wide from inside the box, and Jinky Helton got sent one-on-one with the goalkeeper and put the slowest shot I've ever seen wide of the post. I was just stood on the opposite end watching it trickling, going, it must be going in, it must be going in, and it trickled by the post, and then they went up the other end and scored. So I feel like if Suns had taken the lead, maybe it would have been a different game, but the performance was really flat. It was one-dimensional, one pace. It was just lacking any sort of composure or excitement. I mean, there was very, very little to get excited about, aside from those two chances, which probably both came within the first half hour. That was it. And the mood from everybody talking about it and everyone around me on the terracing and things was like, if Suns could have played that game until next Saturday, and it's such a cliche to say, they wouldn't have scored. And they finished the game with about four strikers on. None of them looked like scoring. Yeah. Nobody looked like scoring at any point.
It'd been a long drive back down the road again.
You know, I made a weekend of it, because I always do when we go to Elgin. I thought, I'll make a weekend of it. It was my other half's birthday, and we went over to Aberdeen, spent the night in Aberdeen, out for dinner. I had a lovely weekend. It's just a shame the football ruined it.
Usually, everything else is great. That's usual, isn't it? Your football usually spoils your day or spoils your weekend. But I guess this, as we've been saying on our own podcast, that just how much this league can sort of bite you in the ass a little bit if you take your eye off the ball a little bit, and just shows you how much everybody can actually beat everybody on their day.
Yeah, I don't think any team can have an off day, because I don't think there's a great deal between most of the teams in this league. And it was kind of the same last year as well, where, you know, in previous years you've had Cove, you've had Kelty, you've had Queen's Park, the big money teams who you look at their squad and go, well, they should absolutely stroke to this title. There's no team like that. And you would say, by and large, most of the teams are probably going to have similar budgets, similar squads, similar fan bases even. Like, you know, numbers-wise, there's not clubs in the league that you go, they're getting double what we're getting, so they're able to pay double the money. It's going to be so, so tight. And I don't see an awful lot between it. I mean, Suns were very comfortable in second place at the end of last season, largely thanks to the 7 wins from 7 at the start of the year. But you look at it, I mean, Annan obviously battered us in the playoffs. East Fife had beaten us that season twice, I think. No, once. East Fife had beaten us going right the way down the league. Albion Rovers beat us 5-1 at home. What on earth? How did they end up getting relegated with like Charlie Riley and Joe Bevanin scoring 5 at the Rock? But yeah, I don't see there being a lot in it. And I don't think any team in this league can have an off day. I think the amount of times where you come away from a game and go, oh, we didn't play very well, but we got the win, I don't think that's going to happen very much.
So what do you think about Saturday then? First time, couple of seasons that we've played each other in the league. What's your thoughts on Saturday's game?
I've written down, because I can't help myself, I have to do my commentary notes and in my head, and you know, I'm not commentating anymore, but once you've got that bug, you just can't help but start looking up stats and everything like that. And I put there that I am expecting a very open game. So I was looking at it, the two sides with the most shots in the league, Suns with the most shots on target in the league, and Peterhead are one shot on target behind. Now, if those two teams can start scoring goals, then there should be some serious goals on display. So I've got in my head, I could see it being 3-1 either way. And I think if Suns take the lead, they might just grow in a bit of confidence, and with the chances that they've created in other games, that could be the chance. Peterhead take the lead. Suns didn't show very much against Elgin, and to be honest, if Elgin had a wee bit more, maybe a wee bit more about them up front, they certainly could have added a second before half-time, and they certainly could have had goals after they scored their second. So if you were to ask me just on the spot for a scoreline, 3-1 each way.
Either way. After reading all those stats and things like that, it's got 0-0 written all over it.
It would just be another one of those ones where Suns clock up another 14 shots, 2 of them on target, and don't score.
Yeah. Is there anybody that we should be looking out for? Obviously, we've mentioned some of the names. Anybody in particular that we should be looking out for?
So I think two guys that might be worth keeping an eye on, and two guys with Aberdeen connections, actually, that I think fans will certainly be hoping to see start, and you might get an idea of how Stevie Farrell's going to approach the game if you see them starting, is Michael Luth and Calvin Orsi. Calvin Orsi last season was probably our biggest attacking threat. He's now in a run of 80 games without a goal. Those things don't seem to go hand in hand, but they are true. He's great fun to watch when he's in full flow, like just rampaging down the wing. It's just all pace and physicality and kind of weird hip shuffles that he does. But it's not elegant or, you know, dainty or anything like that. It's just blood and thunder, League Two wing play. He's been out. He got sent off in the playoff game at Annan, and then he got an injury at the start of the season. He turned down and moved to Queen of the South, stuck with us, then got injured. And he's only started, I think, it's the only two games he started have been the Challenge Cup. Kelty and Kilmarnock B. Both times I wasn't at a Kilmarnock B game because I don't take anything to do with B teams. But in Kelty, certainly, for 60 minutes or so, he looked really, really lively, playing kind of right wing back, having been previously a flat out winger. I think if he starts, I think fans will be pretty pleased with that because he's just someone who brings a bit of excitement, brings a bit of urgency, and that we've not seen a lot of this season. Michael Ruth being the other guy, and Michael Ruth's such a funny player because you watch him play and you think, he's getting in great positions, he's having chances, his hold-up play is good, he's quick, strong. And then you look at his stats and go, how's this guy like basically averaging a goal a year? Mm. Like, he looks like he should be scoring so much more than that. Got his first goal for us against Kelty a couple of weeks ago. It was a really well-taken goal. It was actually the most difficult chance he had as well. He kind of shrugged off a defender, cut inside, and then arrowed it left-footed across the goalkeeper. And I thought, great, like that's what he needed. He needed a goal to get off the mark. Then he was dropped at the weekend. I thought, ah, right, okay, maybe that wasn't the wisest move. And you've got a striker who's on a year-long goal drought that he gets a goal, flying off the back of that, and then he finds himself back in the bench. He came on against Kelty, and I was talking to our programme editor, Graham, about it, and he was basically like, Ruth, okay, he didn't get a goal, but he's been on the pitch for half an hour, I think, compared to everyone else, had more chances than any other Suns player. He just gets himself in good places. He's a good striker of the ball. He's been denied by a couple of phenomenal saves. I think it'd be a surprise if he didn't start, given how he's shown up in recent weeks, and also given that Suns didn't create a great deal about a Briggs at the weekend. If those two start, I think fans will be feeling a wee bit more positive. Midfield's maybe an interesting one as well, and I won't go on too much, but Suns have quite a lot of options in there, and that's kind of why they play or have been playing 3-5-2 in recent weeks. But Stevie Farrell has this kind of conundrum where I think he wants to play Ryan Blair, who's a really good player last season for us, but his form's maybe just dipped off recently. He wants to play Blair Malcolm, who's looked excellent since he came in from Albion Rovers. He wants to play Finlay Gray, who's probably one of our best players and was last season. And he's got Carlo Pignatiello in there, who is probably our best player.
Mm.
Now, he can also play right back or right wing, but I think everyone thinks he's at his best in central mid. And he's kind of trying to fit all four players in. So you've got Blair and Malcolm, two defensively minded players. You've got Carlo, who wants to sit deep as well. And then you've got Finlay, who'll go box to box. You can't fit them all into the same team. You can try putting Carlo out wide, but then you've got your best centre mid playing out wide. Mm. Is that really what you're wanting to do? I don't think it is. I'll be very interested to see what he does. And I feel like, from my point of view, if I was in his shoes, I'd be going, Blair Malcolm is the kind of destructive midfield enforcer. Carlo is the driving force, and then Finlay Gray just with his energy to buzz back and forward. Will he do that? No idea. Will he set formation? No idea. It's all part of the fun.
It's all part of the fun. Well, we'll look forward to a highly entertaining game now that you've mentioned all the starts. But, Fraser, thanks very much for your time. Thoroughly enjoyed it. We'll obviously try and catch up with you again later on in the season as we play each other another three or four times, possibly if there's cup games as well. Pleasure talking to you. All the best for the rest of the season, and we'll talk to you again later.
Take care. Thank you.
So that is it for this week. We do hope you have enjoyed it. My thanks goes to Fraser Clark from the Rock and Goal podcast for joining me to preview the Dumbarton game, and of course to Martin Smith for his insight as always. A big thank you to everyone for listening and for your comments and questions. Do keep them coming in, we do appreciate them. Martin and I will be back again next week, so until then, stay safe and we'll see you all again very soon.